I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The White House Council on Women and Girls had a conference in April, and they were looking at toys and how toys are shapers of the ideas children have about jobs, their roles in society, and actually their gender. Toy companies came to the White House, and many of them showcased how they're changing their brands to appeal to both boys and girls. One company is working on selling superhero action figures to more girls. So we're going to be this hour talking about gender-neutral toys, how important they may be, and how companies are changing how they market toys, and asking you, as you deal with toys with your children, because children love toys, we all did, what do you keep gender in mind when you buy toys, and do you want to make sure that you're buying gender-neutral toys? Our guest is Professor Christia Spears Brown, an associate professor of developmental psychology at the University of Kentucky, author of Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, Raising Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. Her work on the impact of gender stereotypes on children and adolescents has been published by many scientific journals and has been featured in a lot of press, newspapers, magazines, radio, and TV. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that is @KDunnShow. And we thank you very much, Professor Brown, for joining us this hour. Should be interesting.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
So when did companies start thinking about changing their toys to make them toys that can be played with easily by girls and boys, gender-neutral toys? Is this new?
Well, I mean, I think first the idea is to think, what even is a gender-neutral toy? I mean, I think toys are inherently gender-neutral. Really, a toy is whoever is playing with it. So we've always had toys that, things like we've had dolls and we've had construction play. We've always kind of had that. Now, and granted, girls typically were playing with the dolls early on, so kind of in the earliest 20th century, and boys were more likely to be given construction sets and chemistry sets and things like that. But the real push to making things really overtly gendered, where everything is in a pink box or a blue box, and you only see girls playing with it on the commercial or only see boys playing with it on the commercial, that's really revved up in the past 20 years or so. You didn't see it in the 70s and 80s. It was really the kind of mid-90s where things got so over the top with their pinkness and their blueness that I think it's starting to become much more apparent to us.
Mm. I think, and I would imagine this would be reflected in sales of these items, that one of the biggest marketing things that ever happened for toys was Barbies for girls and superheroes for boys.
Right. And that has been around. I mean, that's been around for, 40, 50 years. And so people have had various phases of thinking about it. The people that kind of look at the trends in toys talk a lot about how in the 70s, the women's movement actually was a pretty powerful movement for toys as well. And you saw a push towards having more kind of gender-neutral types of toys. So you would see both boys and girls playing with a lot of toys. But there seemed to be somewhat of a backlash against that about kind of 20 years later. So in about the 90s, you started to see things start to segregate again.
Tell me about what toys do for us. If you're a girl or a boy playing with toys, the kinds of toys that are good for you in terms of thinking about what your life might be 15 years hence or a little bit more, and also developing skills.
Right. I mean, I think that's what I think parents honestly underestimate, is the power of toys. Because every toy is educational. I always laugh in the Toys R Us, any toy store, there's the sign that kind of says educational toys.
Right.
But research shows every single toy is educational. Every Barbie is educational. Every violent video game is educational. Because that's how kids learn about the world. They're born with no language skills, no hand-eye coordination, no skills whatsoever. And what they do is they pay attention and they pick up and they practice. And so everything that they interact with teaches them something about the world, about themselves, and about how they should interact with other people. So we really have to be much, much more critical of the things that we give our kids to know that everything I give them teaches them something. You know, whether it be Barbie, we see that girls that play with Barbie have worse body image after playing with a Barbie than girls that are playing with other kind of dolls, because Barbies are very thin, they're unrealistically thin. So what girls are getting from that is, look how she looks, wow, I look really different than this.
Right.
Right. So that's right there is an education. It's just not really the message we want to be giving. So when you think about what are good toys, I think, you know, I often don't talk much about gender neutral toys. I really talk about, well, what toys are good for any type of skill development. So any kid should learn nurturing and caretaking and empathy. Dolls are really great for that. So both boys and girls can learn how to take care of other people, how to be sensitive and kind by playing with dolls. Or, you know, sometimes kind of stuffed animals work for that as well. But those are really good traits that we want everybody to grow up with, right, is to be how to be nurturing and empathetic. And doll play really helps with that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So we want all kids to have spatial skills and good kind of hand-eye coordination and good kind of spatial rotation, things that we measure on IQ tests once they start school. Legos, great for that. So all kids should have those types of toys.
So you're saying then that girls should make sure that they have Legos and things that will use those spatial skills, and boys should be sure to have some form of doll mm-hmm. so that they can learn to be more nurturing. I haven't been to a toy store. Our kids are all grown now recently. But I would imagine there are not a lot of dolls that are purchased for boys, maybe stuffed animals. But are there dolls?
There are some, but you really do. You have to go look. And that's what I think is really tough for parents that I think really have good intentions and they want to foster these traits in their kids. But it's really a challenge in a toy store to find things that are would be appealing to both. There are toys. There are dolls that actually are for boys. I mean, I would say any doll is for a boy. But there are dolls that I think most parents would feel more comfortable buying for sons. They're like kind of boys and they're stuffed, but they're like little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And those you can find. You just really have to be active about it and really kind of seek them out.
Right. I think dolls are a great thing for all boys and girls because mm-hmm. think of all the, you probably played with dolls. We played with dolls when we were kids. I played with a lot of paper dolls, actually, because they were less expensive than getting dolls. But all the conversations you'd have with dolls, you know, you'd talk to your doll. It's like talking to your dog, only you could really set up, you know, all these different life experiences for mm-hmm. your doll. And it became an extension of the family almost in a little way.
It does. And I think, you know, we think about things that we presume are gender differences. So we think about girls being better at kind of conversational skills and better at these kind of close, intimate friendships and better at taking care of babies. It's not that these were inborn traits. We just, as girls, practiced them a lot when we were young. And that's one thing dolls are really good at.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk to them. We play with them with our friends. We set up little scenarios. We take care of them like babies. All those kinds of traits and kind of abilities that we practiced for many years, we use in adulthood. But we also want boys to have those things because boys are usually going to grow up to be dads, and we want them to be comfortable with caretaking and being nurturing. And I know lots of women that would like their husbands to be very conversational and very good at kind of intimate disclosure and things like that, all things we want men to have as well. We just don't really foster it when they're boys like we do for girls.
It's one of the reasons, I know it was a great marketing ploy, but some of it was luck. I don't even know who made these, but the whole Beanie Baby craze.
Right.
I had no second thoughts at all about giving the youngest boy Beanie Babies, and oh, he loved Beanie Babies. I can't part with them. I still have bags and bags of Beanie Babies at home, but it was kind of nice because boys and girls liked Beanie Babies, right?
They do. They do. And I think that's the thing is that boys, I mean, so what we see with toys is that there really are not innate differences in what children like. So there's lots of lab studies where they've brought boys and girls into a lab and they give them a toy that's a made-up toy that no one's ever seen before. And they tell the kids, they'll tell half the kids, this is a toy that girls have usually played with and really like. Or they'll put it in a pink box, for example. And what they find is that when they give that toy to the kids, the girls say, yes, this toy is great, it's interesting, they want to play with it, and the boys hardly touch it. When you give the exact same toy to a different group of kids and say, this is a toy that boys like, or put it in a blue box, for example, then the boys say, this toy is great, it's a lot of fun. They spend a lot of time playing with it. Girls say, no, this is boring, I don't want to touch it. So the toy, it's not the toy, it's who it's labeled for. And so that's often what we see with things like dolls, is that they're in pink boxes, and they're girls, and they're in the aisle that's explicitly labeled girl toys.
Right.
And so boys see that and think, I want nothing to do with that.
Absolutely.
And it's not about the play itself. It's about, this is not for my team. You know, I'm a boy. I'm on the boy team. I only want stuff that's for my group.
Right. I find this a little bit problematic. Tell me, with your studies and your background, you think it is or not. The Wall Street Journal had an interesting piece recently about all of this, and the concerns have led to, they said, more science kits on the shelf targeted to girls because there's a push to get more girls in the STEM areas. But some of these kits, and I wonder what your response is, Adrian's perfume doll, so that you can make perfume or you can make other things that are more associated with girls than with boys to get girls interested in science. Really, does it take making perfume to get you interested in science? I just thought that was weird. Is it?
Yeah, I completely agree. It is weird. And those of us that study kind of gender and girls in STEM, we all kind of think it's weird. It's actually part of a bigger trend. There's another scholar in my field, Lynn Libin, who gave a talk and was showing clips of a very similar kind of pattern of what are people doing to try to get girls interested in STEM in terms of, like, toy companies and things like that. And they have one thing that's called science cheerleaders. And they're very highly sexualized women in very skimpy clothes that are going around and talking about science.
Oh.
I think it's a similar pattern of we're like playing into one stereotype to try to interest girls in science, which I would say perhaps is not the way to best go about it.
Yeah, I think you're right. What about superheroes for girls? I know that they're starting to be marketed. Do all kids like superheroes, and was it a long time coming to get superheroes for girls, or could we do without them?
I do think, I mean, I have a couple of thoughts, and I'll say I have, you know, so I'm a developmental psychologist, but I also have two daughters, so one is 12.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
oh.
So one is 12 and one is 6, so I'm right in the middle of all of these, you know, dilemmas. And so my 6-year-old daughter is very, very into superheroes. So I deal with this. I'm kind of more aware of this trend than I normally would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all kids have probably always been interested in superheroes. I do think because they're fun. They're very dramatic. There's a good guy and a bad guy. There's lots of action. There's a lot of kind of drama in the stories of superheroes. I think they're inherently interesting. I mean, since the beginning of storytelling, we've had ultimately superheroes. And it is a challenge, though, for girls to always see only males be the characters. So I think that's often one of the kind of problems for girls is that they're interested in it, but they don't see any girls. And so it's often hard to find a girl. I know my own daughter is very interested in superheroes, and I've tried to get things like Wonder Woman. It's sometimes very hard to find the Wonder Woman kind of parallel. It's really easy to find Superman and Batman and Spider-Man and those. And so I think girls often want to see themselves reflected in the stories.
Mm-hmm.
That said, these new superheroes that are coming out are similar to that perfume science kit. They're a little more sexualized. They wear more makeup. They're kind of girlier. They can't just be regular superheroes that happen to be girls. And this is where the concern is that can't we just have superheroes and there be girls and boys, but they all be kind of part of the same type of universe? Or what instead we're seeing is that there's the girl superheroes. So again, it's as though boys and girls are so different that they can't even play with the same toys, right? That girls have to have this kind of segregated section of toys that's different than just the regular. So there's regular superheroes and then there's girl superheroes. And that's, I think, where the concern becomes. And then it's like, well, girls are always just kind of the secondary or the kind of second thought, as opposed to just, let's just make a variety of superheroes. And then everyone kind of finds their own favorite.
And make them all look like E.T. And we won't know what they are, right?
Because what we also learned then is that the message is also really powerful for boys. And so then what boys learn, so girls are learning that they can't just like the regular thing. They have to get stuff that's kind of catered to them and that what their play has to be separate from what boys do. And boys then learn that it's not a value to play with Wonder Woman or the girl superheroes, that they should only value the boys because the girls are going to get kind of pulled out into this other genre.
Right.
And I think the boy as the norm is a troubling trend in a lot of kids' media and literature and toy play as well.
Mm-hmm. Professor Brown, I'm wondering, did you see a vast difference between the toys that were available on the market for your 12-year-old as compared to your 6-year-old?
I mean, so what's interesting is that with the in some ways there's two different trends going on, I think, simultaneously. So you have one trend where things are getting more and more gendered. My favorite kind of example of this is the Little People school bus that I think everyone's had as a toy for the past 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's got the little people in it. That's always been very logically yellow because that's what school buses look like.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, I don't know, decade, now there's a pink version of that.
Oh.
So what isn't a gendered toy at all, a school bus, now there's the pink version, so that girls have their own separate bus. Again, boys won't want to touch it, but as though girls wouldn't want to just play with the yellow bus. And that you didn't see 12 to 15 years ago.
Right.
So you've seen kind of an increase in toys that didn't need to be gendered, that I would argue aren't inherently gendered in any way, making them gender. At the same time, I think you see a backlash where you see people being frustrated with that, and you see more toys that are trying to get kids of both gender interested in them.
Mm-hmm. What about these easy bake ovens? Are they still pink and marketed for girls? Because they're something that everybody should know how to cook.
Exactly. They have, again, here's, I don't know, the logic of it is always, I guess, baffling to me, is that they now have a purple one, and then they have a black one.
Hmm.
So they have one that's marketed to boys, but again, they're going to have two different ones. Again, as though we can't just play with the same.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't make any sense.
There's a girl version and a boy version now of the Easy Bake Oven.
Uh-huh. All right, let's welcome phone calls. We're talking about toys. There was this conference in the White House, and our guest certainly has studied this issue and written about the issue. The conference at the White House was inviting toy manufacturers and people who are in the line of work that our guest is to look at the role of toys in breaking down differences in how girls and boys play and the toys with which they play. Our guest this hour has studied this pretty thoroughly. She is Professor Christia Spears Brown. She's an associate professor of developmental psychology at the University of Kentucky, author of Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. What do you do with this issue in your house? You have boys and girls or girls and boys and a mixture. What do you do about toys? And what are you seeing on the shelves? What's breakthrough toys for you these days? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, lots of phone calls coming in. We go to Jill in La Crosse first. Hello, Jill.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, we are raising a 3-year-old boy, and he's wonderful. He's very active, and he loves playing with toys. We've tried to be conscious about offering him toys that are gender neutral, just because if we have more kids in the future, it's nice to have kids toys that appeal to all of our children and the friends that come over and play with them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've really noticed is when other people make assumptions about the toys that he might want to play with. And so we try to encourage him to choose toys that he is interested in, that he wants to play with, regardless of if they're blue or pink or boy toys or girl toys. And so when I really notice this especially is when we go to McDonald's, for instance, if we drive through the drive-thru and order a Happy Meal, they will ask, do you want the boy toy or the girl toy?
Oh, do they?
Because they can't see what child is in the car. And if we go into the store, they don't ask. They just assume based on how my child looks. And, he has short hair. He looks like a boy. And so they automatically put the boy toy into the bag. It kind of bugs me because that might not be what he would have chosen. So one time we went through the drive-thru and they asked, do you want the boy toy or the girl toy? And I said, It doesn't matter. You choose. And the poor person working, they were paralyzed. They didn't know what to do. And so even when we go into the restaurant, I'll walk my son over to the display where all the toys are displayed, and I will point to the top and say, do you want a toy? Do you want this kind of toy or this kind of toy? And not saying, do you want the boy toy or the girl toy, but just saying, here are your two options, which one looks more appealing to you, and let him choose. And even when we order, I'll say, you know, he'd like the car or he would like the Powder Puff Girl or whatever it happens to be. My preference would be that they just have one option as a toy and not have to pick between the two. Like when they had the Peanuts, you know, Snoopy, Charlie Brown, that was the choice for every kid. And when they had Angry Birds, it was the choice for every kid. Rather than just, you know, the boy toy or the girl toy.
I thought they were moving toward that. Didn't I read that somewhere, Professor Brown?
They did in a couple of stores.
Oh.
But it did not seem to take off nationwide.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
It did hit the news. You're right. It did hit the news because I think one store I know was doing it. But it didn't take on otherwise.
Yeah. Well, I would certainly, when you go to McDonald's, let people know you would prefer that, Jill. Doesn't hurt, right?
Right, yeah, and I try to just say, you know, I ask him, can, you know, you choose which one you want, and then I'll tell the people, you know, right out. But sometimes they just automatically make the assumption, oh, you have a little boy with you, you're going to want the boy toy.
Right.
You know, which isn't maybe what my son would choose for himself.
Well, there must be a whole lot of toys that really have no male-female identification that would be traditional, right, Professor Brown? There are tops, there are whistles, there are all kinds of things.
Well, and I always, you know, again, what I go back to kind of at the beginning is that really no toy is gendered, right? There is. There's a Powerpuff, there's the, you know, the My Little Pony, and there's the race car. Those are toys.
Right.
There's nothing that has to be gendered about that. Some boys want to play with the pony, and some boys want the car, and some girls want the pony, and some girls want the car. There's nothing inherently gendered about it. It's really just this kind of cultural presumption that we have that one group ought to like one type of toy more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not based at all on individual differences for toys, toy preferences, because she's, you know, the caller's exactly right. Boys and girls are going to vary as to what particular toy they want. And so, I mean, I would add, too, to that story, because I think that story, I face that also, the same kind of situation, and that I think what you can also do in addition to that is to talk about that. I mean, I think that's a good opportunity to talk about this is a stereotype. So when it happens, when they automatically put a boy toy in there, I use that as an opportunity to say, you know, I think it's really a shame that they just assumed because you're a boy you wanted this kind of a toy, when I know that lots of boys like the other toy and lots of girls like this one. And so use that as a time to start a dialogue, even with the three-year-old, about what gender stereotypes are. Because what will happen is that message will start to get internalized, and they'll start to learn that, oh, I'm only supposed to play with the ones that are colored blue or black, and I'm not supposed to like the ones that are pink or purple. And so, but if you give them another explanation for why the people do that, that it, you can perfectly like the My Little Pony. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's a real shame that they didn't recognize that lots of boys would probably like that too.
Mm-hmm.
Is that gives them a different explanation for what's happening.
Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
For getting us rolling here with the calls. Let's go next to Jenny in Madison. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really love that we're talking about this. And I just had a few points and a question. I've noticed that I think one of the biggest issues with toys not being, quote, gender neutral is advertising, number one, and then also the parents and adults in the child's life reinforcing those stereotypes.
Sure.
Like we have a two-year-old son, and my mother-in-law always says he's all boy whenever he, you know, is messy or whatever. And so I find that really interesting. And the other point I had was that, you know, he's only two, so he doesn't really have a concept of boys and girls type things, but he has always gravitated towards, like, trucks and cars and tractors and stuff like that. And so it's very, I laugh about it because we really want to raise him in a gender neutral sort of way, but he just totally gravitates towards the things that would be, you know, more looked at as a boy toy. And So I just thought that was interesting. And then I'm just wondering what you would recommend doing when you have other adults in the child's life that are saying comments like what my mother-in-law says, and how you would address that as a parent to kind of maybe ask them not to say stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I have the exact same issues. So I'm going to do a couple of things. I also want to be very nice, right? You don't want to be the, like, problematic daughter-in-law. And so I often say, oh, well, you know, lots of boys and girls are rough and tumble. I don't really know what it means to be all boy. I try to say it in a kind of lighthearted way to the adult that's saying it, to kind of correct it, but without being too confrontational, just because that's my own personality style. But I do always correct it once we've left that space and I can talk to my own kids about it. So a lot of times the conversation will be like, you know, grandma forgets that sometimes boys can be rough and tumble, but sometimes girls can be rough and tumble too. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes grandma doesn't realize that, and then kind of whatever the stereotype is. So I do it in kind of a respectful way because I don't want to be rude about the adult that was saying it. But I also want to make sure that every single time it happens, I let my kids know that that was actually a stereotype and wasn't factual. Because I think a big part of what we can do is, you know, we can buy as many gender-neutral toys as we want, but you can't edit out the rest of the world, and you can't censor everything. And so what you have to really do is give kids language for recognizing what the stereotypes are.
What do you make of the fact, and I'm wondering what the studies show on this, that Jenny's 2-year-old son really likes what we think about naturally as boy toys. Maybe it's changing now, but traditionally the trucks, the tractors, all of those would be traditionally what boys would play with, that he gravitates toward those.
Yeah, that's a great point. And there's actually studies that have been looking at that, and I actually find that all kids, when you give them a range of toys, actually all kids like wheeled toys better than any other toy.
Really?
So, yes, girls do as well. So in studies that were designed to look at something else and they give a range of toys, girls also play with the car in the garage more than they play with any other toy. That and building toys, actually both boys and girls play with more.
Nothing like those Legos, huh?
They come up time and again in research as being really good. Also things like Lincoln Logs, which I...
Yes, I love those when I was a kid.
And they're still remarkably popular with kids. But no, wheeled toys and cars and things like that are appealing really to all kids. So I'm not surprised boys gravitate to it, but girls would as well.
Thanks, Jenny, for the call. Joyce is next in Madison. Hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 64 years old, and my son now is 29, but I have a funny story. I grew up on a farm. I had only sisters. I had nieces. Everybody had girls in my family. I had a child late, and I have a boy, and I'm a feminist, so I have the boy. And I was a little baffled by it, and I'd take him to a toy store, and I'd be over by the dolls, and he'd be over, like you said, like you were just talking about, over by the trucks. And so I had him at the farm one time, and, of course, there were just girl toys there. And so I brought out the Barbie kit, the Barbie little bag. Mm-hmm. And I thought, he was 3 years old. I thought, I'm just going to see what happens here. I didn't know what was going to happen. And he took the toys out. They were dolls, a little troll doll, another little doll, and then a Barbie doll. And then he takes the Barbie doll, he picks that one, and he starts taking her clothes off. And I'm thinking, well, this is cool. He's going to start playing with a doll. But he takes her clothes off, and I'm sorry if I'm going to offend anybody, and he spreads her legs, and he uses her like a machine gun.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And everything was a gun, you know? And so he's like, rah, 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 you know, with his voice.
Right.
And so it's just like, it was just amazing to me that I was raising him that way. But he did. He always wanted to pick up a stick. It was a gun. I didn't want him to have guns. He picked up a stick. Everything was sort of male. And now he's this incredible man now that wants to have children and he'll probably be the stay-at-home dad.
Huh.
But he was raised picking what he wanted to pick and
that's
using
what he did
it how
with
he wanted
Barbie
to
doll.
Use it. I mean, he had Beanie Babies. But he had Beanie Babies and he would make clothes like capes and swords for them.
Huh.
But he nurtured them.
Yeah. Professor Brown, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I hear that a version of that story a good bit. The other one I hear is they'll use the dolls as like projectiles. They'll, you know, use them to kind of slingshot into another room, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Where you usually see it starting to happen is around age 3. That's when you start to see a switch in really what kids, how they play with toys. So 1-year-old boys don't really play with toys any differently than 1-year-old girls. Even at around 2, it's really around 3 where you start to see differences start to emerge. And a lot of it has to do with how they see other boys play. And I think what's tough about parenting is that really our influence is pretty minor when it comes to how kids are going to play with toys. So, you know, again, I hear that a lot of feminist moms are saying, I bought these dolls and all he's doing is throwing them across the room or using them as a bat or using them as a gun. And usually it starts at around 3 once they start paying attention to what other kids are doing. But then the message I think is still buy them. Right, so even if they're using them in ways that aren't how you envisioned when you thought you're, you know, going to raise your sons, still have dolls in the house, even if they're using them in kind of unusual, very boy-like ways, because it ultimately tells the kid that I don't think that there are boy and girl toys. Right, so even if I get a doll and we buy it, and some parents say, you know, I buy a doll and my son just never touched it. It still at least conveys the message that you think that there's no such thing as gendered toys. And ultimately, that can be powerful. But at 3, you really do see boys play like boys and girls do like girls, but you don't earlier. So it doesn't seem to be anything inborn. It seems to be them starting to pay more attention to kind of the world around them.
Thank you so much for your call, Joyce. There seems to be this real, as there is in the election this year, there seems to be this gender difference here. This study, 41% of adults 18 to 34 believe toy makers should be marketing every toy to both boys and girls, compared with 22% of those 35 to 54. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I think that this is in many ways generational. I mean, I do think you see these things kind of change over time. I don't know. I do think it's interesting as people have more and more kids and they're in toy stores. I think what gets frustrating is when you have kids and you're in a toy store and you're forced to make kind of a political statement, and you don't want to be. You want to just buy a toy, but you're in there and they're so segregated right now that it's hard to just buy kind of a random toy for a kid. You're really forced into this pink aisle or a blue aisle. And I think you are going to see a shift happening again. I mean, you're starting to see trends of it now, but I think you will see in the next decade, hopefully, less of a segregation that there is right now.
Sarah is our next caller in Wausau. Hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks. Thank you. I've got 2 boys, middle school and elementary school. And early on, it was hard when we had birthday parties. We would get all these presents that were quote-unquote boy toys, and they'd be based on those violent superhero movies that were all rated R, you know, that I never showed my boys.
Yeah.
And they would get nightmares. And you go down the aisles and the toy aisles, and there's so many violent superhero characters. I mean, even when my boys were 3 and 4, I had a choice. I could buy underwear that was white or underwear that had Incredible Hulk face on it, you know. And I didn't want my boys thinking that the Incredible Hulk was a good role model. So
right.
it was really hard, you know. So they all had white, plain old, boring underwear. But the last point I want to make is that my boys gravitated naturally to creative toys like Legos, blocks, something called Picasso tiles. And we had a lot of little mini dolls in the house from when I grew up. And what they would do is they would build buildings and stick these little dolls in them and make stories around them, you know. So they kind of mixed and matched and were very creative.
Very nice.
So I just wanted to bring that up.
Very nice.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call.
I think that points to the frustration is that just the lack of variability, right, is that it's not having a lot of options is, I think, what can be frustrating when it comes to all of these toy buying or clothes buying. It's that it's not that the Incredible Hulk is necessarily bad, but when that's your only option besides the really plain one, that's where I think it gets really limiting for kids and really says there's one kind of boy you can be and everything else is not okay, or there's only the princessy kind of girl and everything else is not okay. That's, I think, one of the biggest dangers of some of this.
Yeah. Rebecca sends this message on Facebook. When my grandson was younger, he loved to play with kitchen things, so we bought him a wooden play kitchen. But all the items for the kitchen came from what I like to call the purple-pink aisles of the local toy stores. Later, he had several different play set sorts of toys that were geared toward girls. They were animal-centric, and he loved animals. So back to the purple-pink aisles to find items for his play sets. Today, he's a rough-and-tumble 9-year-old and loves Legos, but he will not hesitate to pick a quote, girl toy out of a bin if it catches his eye, and occasionally plays with his mom's My Little Pony castle.
Yeah, we all come in different shapes and sizes, you know.
Right. Lynn is next in Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen, and good afternoon to your guests. My children are all grown and out of the house. My oldest is 42 and is a policeman. And, well, first he went to Marquette and became a social worker, then he became a policeman. He is the father of a son. And I raised my kids with gender-neutral toys and had a lot of comments and just let them roll off my back. And, you know, all my kids aren't gone. I have a son at home, and his daughter, he's very, very masculine, and he's so tender with his daughter. And out of all of my children, as far as, you know, labeling them, you know, all boy, it would have been that one. And he's so tender. It's just, they find their own way. Mm-hmm. I think we put too much, we judge too much. And if we let them go and choose their own, they'd be fine. They'd probably do better without us sometimes. Mm-hmm.
That's a nice way to describe him. We could use a whole lot more tenderness, right?
Mm-hmm. That's nice. I mean, I do think that, I mean, I think also the message there, too, that I get from that is that, I mean, I think really what's powerful is to give your kids a range of toys. They'll gravitate towards what they gravitate towards. They're really born with a temperament, and they'll develop in many of the ways that their just temperament's going to dictate. So if we can provide a range of them as opposed to pigeonholing them, then they kind of become their best selves, whatever that may be. And I think that's ultimately what we want in our kids.
Mm-hmm. And Annie in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. So this is kind of a good piggyback off of your previous caller. I have 4 children of my own and raised mostly gender neutral, I think. But also I am a special ed early childhood teacher.
Oh.
And so, and actually every year I've had mostly boys, right? And in the classroom, and there's a house area, there's a dress-up area, and blocks, you know. But sometimes parents will, more than the children, will kind of see the house area and like, oh, boy, my son's playing in the house area quite a bit. Oh, my, he really likes the house area.
Wow.
If I say that, what, he really loves the house area. They, you know, they're not going to say to the teacher, like, oh, get my kid out of there. But but you can tell there's like kind of a hesitation. But I always say, well, you know, he's learning how to be just the best dad. He's going to be such a great dad, you know, because kids imitate so much of our lives, right, when they're playing.
Yes.
And, you know, they'll even play teacher at school, right? And they love to do that. And both boys and girls love to be the teacher and love to stand in front of the calendar and act out what they are seeing and tell other kids what they think they should be doing. And mm-hmm. and that's not a boy or girl thing. That's our life. That's how we live. And the girls love to work on the cars or take out the tools. Oh, well, that's really good because you're going to learn how to take care of, you know, fix your own car when you get big. That's mm-hmm. such, you know, you're going to be such a good grown-up, you know. I mean, that's really what we should be socializing them to be. It's how are you going to be independent and find what you love to do and support them and whatever that is, as opposed to kind of socializing them into a way that their options are so limited. Mm-hmm. So I try and equate it to like, oh, you're going to be such a good dad. Oh, take care of the baby. Be careful of the baby. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're holding the baby, like I heard people saying that they throw the babies or walk around with them upside down. Well, that is true. They will do that, and they'll just go, oh, oh my gosh, you know, maybe you should put the baby to sleep because it's a baby, because you're playing with a doll, so you should play with it and take care of it. If you're in the house area, that's where we take care of our the babies, and they're quick to go, oh yeah, and wrap up the baby, and the girls will do that too. They'll forget that they have a doll in their hand and start walking around with it upside down or swing it. And if you just a reminder, like, oh, the baby, put it in their arms, because that's what you're supposed to do, whether you're a boy or a girl.
Well, you're a good teacher, aren't you, Annie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, very nice. Professor?
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. I mean, I really couldn't say it better. I think that's exactly it, is right. We want everyone to be good parents.
Right.
And that doesn't come naturally. We have to practice it. I think that's exactly, what this conversation is all about, is helping them become the best adults they can be. And most of those traits really apply to both boys and girls. Mm-hmm. I think that's perfect.
We're talking about gender-neutral toys this hour, and our guest is Professor Christia Spears-Brown. She is an associate professor of developmental psychology at University of Kentucky, author of Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, Raising Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. More phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls. Richard in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Interesting show. Unfortunately, I was only catching bits and pieces of it. So I did have a question, and actually a comment and a question. In listening to Dr. Luann Brzezinski, I forget, or something to that effect, and differences in the female brain and the male brain.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm curious about, though, is the push for gender neutrality pushed more by the female parent or both parents? And given that there are some known gender differences, at what point is pushing gender neutrality countering the natural tendencies that boys and girls will have? And I'll listen on the air. Thank you very
much. All right, good points. Thanks, Richard.
So I'll say a lot of the things that people talk about being as difference in the brain have actually been shown to be not present actually in human brains. There are very few differences in brains between boys and girls. There's a couple of really small ones that are related to much more things related to our biology. So I'll recommend a book that I think is, if people are interested, it's called Pink Brain, Blue Brain by Elise Elliott. She's a neuroscientist, and I think really nicely summarizes what are actual differences in the brain and what's just really kind of myths and stereotypes. So part of the issue, the question then, is that there aren't a whole lot of inborn differences. Most of the differences we see in terms of behaviors and abilities and traits are really socialized types of differences. In terms of who pushes them more, it's typically dads are a little bit more on the stereotypical side, although that's a generalization, because I know lots of dads don't. But on average, you see dads kind of enforce gender stereotypes a little bit more, particularly with their sons. So in studies of, you know, when looking at kind of who's getting kind of punished more for playing with cross stereotypical toys, it's typically dads are not thrilled when their sons play with dolls, for example. Women are a little bit more flexible, but that's because women are given a lot more flexibility just in general. Girls are allowed to be tomboys. Boys are not really allowed to play with dolls very often in our kind of society.
Mm. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go on.
I'm just wondering if there's a difference depending on the sex of the child that you're raising. If you're raising all sons, is there a tendency to not care as much about gender-neutral issues as opposed to if you were raising all girls or if you were raising a girl and a boy?
I mean, I do think that there has been a push more to help girls be more assertive and more interested in STEM and things like that. I think often a lot of these issues about gender are focused on girls' development. The problem is that the stereotypes that face boys are, you could argue, perhaps even more troubling. You know, all of the aggressive toys, all of the kind of violence that's really handed down to boys, the not being able to talk about their emotions. So when they're sad, being told boys don't cry. So, you know, they have all these emotions, which we know boys and girls, when they're young, cry the same amount. They experience sadness the same amount. But boys are really taught you can't express this. But yet here's some violent toys to play with. And they're really punished by sometimes their parents, but really by their peers if they do anything at all feminine or anything not very masculine. So boys, it's really rigid as to what they're kind of allowed to be. So even though it's really tough for boys, you have to be this one certain kind of boy or you get kind of teased for it. Much of our attention that you see in the media is really focused on girls. But girls really are given a lot more flexibility than boys are, even though they're getting kind of the bulk of our attention.
Thanks, Ron. Thank you. I can't remember your name, whoever called, but it was a good point. And let's go next to Ron in Oshkosh. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Maybe I've missed something because I'm at that other end of the demographic at 50.
Mm-hmm.
But what's wrong with boys and girls being treated and allowed to be boys and girls and play with boy and girl toys? After all, boys and girls, men and women are different.
So research shows that we're not actually all that different. And so that's part of the problem is that there are studies have looked at millions of kids, and you take millions of kids and put them and adults and put them all into kind of one big study and look at it. It's called a meta-analysis. And we see that there are actually very few differences. And in fact, there are more differences between individual women and individual girls and between individual men and individual boys than there are between the kind of average man and the average woman. So the problem is if you're one of those girls that doesn't really fit the norm, where do you fit? Where do you fall if everything is very stereotypical? So part of it is that the assumption is not accurate, is that there aren't that many differences at the group level. They're pretty small, and they don't really predict much about an individual person's abilities or traits or interests.
What do you see as differences, Ron? Oops, Ron is gone. All right, let's go to Matt in Waukesha. Hi.
Hi, I was just calling in. It seems like... And a lot of these callers, the case seems to be that they're putting their political agenda ahead of the well-being of their child. And the particular caller where they gave their son a doll and he used it like a machine gun, it seems to me that maybe they shouldn't be giving their children dolls and instead be giving maybe, and I believe the advice I was given was to just keep the doll in the home. I feel like if the child doesn't want to play with the doll, they shouldn't have to play with the doll. There should be other options. It seems like this is being forced on children's throats.
Professor.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two different things. I think there's one about providing toys, so making sure that if the mood strikes and they want to play with it all, that it's available. But you're right. I think really my big kind of emphasis on what I always try to make as the take-home point is that individual kids differ. They all differ drastically from one another. Gender doesn't tell us much about those differences, but really, you know, one child's going to differ from the next, who's going to differ than the next. Some kids are going to like dolls. Some kids don't want them. Some kids are going to like to play really rough and tumble types of play. Some kids aren't. Gender doesn't really predict that, but you're right. Individual kids are going to really differ from one another, and so we do have to respect those individual differences. The problem is the gender isn't a really informative part about that individual difference, but I think his point's completely accurate. If a kid doesn't want a doll, they shouldn't be forced to play with one. But I do think having them available so that if they want to, it's an option.
Thanks so much, Matt, for your call. And Professor, thank you so much for being with us. Interesting conversation. Our guest this hour, Professor Christia Spears Brown. She is author of Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, Raising Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. She's an associate professor of developmental psychology at the University of Kentucky. And she makes me want to go to a toy store. I haven't been to one in quite a while. Aren't many children around in our families to look to see how things are being marketed and what indeed the toys are. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. If you didn't make it on the air, or some of you have long Facebook messages, and I'm sorry we just didn't have time for all of them, but I recommend that the audience go to the Facebook page and read some of the messages, which really add a lot of depth to this already long conversation. And that Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Many thanks to Kiri Salinas for producing this hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production in our studios here in Milwaukee. Tomorrow during this hour, Barbara Streisand, the story of her life, which is really quite remarkable, and we'll also listen to some of her music. The author of Barbara Streisand, Redefining Femininity, Beauty, and Power will be our guest.